Lucis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Welcome. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have within you the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way with new eyes. So, stay with us and together we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Alice Bailey is the founder of the Lucis Trust organization, and she wrote 24 volumes of literature, and the main inspiration for the dialogue on this show comes from the works of Alice Bailey, as does the following thought. The inauguration of labor unions was a great spiritual movement leading to the uprising of the divine spirit in mankind. So our topic for today is the spirit of labor. And I'd like to ask a question that really comes from Cahil Gibran. And Cahil Gibran says that work is love made visible. Is there a spiritual dimension to labor?
There is. People might not have thought about it this way because so much of labor is associated with very practical, mundane work on the physical plane. But in fact, according to the writings of Alice Bailey and other sources, there's a real spiritual component behind labor that all of us participate in and the growth of the labor movement itself. And maybe we could start with the history of the labor movement. As I understand it, it began in the early part of the 19th century, and I think it was associated with the growth of the Industrial Revolution and the enlistment of masses of people to work on a level of employment that I think at the time really misused and used up and dispensed with human beings in a very callous way. People were treated as kind of automatons in this vast process that resulted in the Industrial Age. And out of that discontent and that sense of unfairness and in many cases real suffering, there arose out of, you could say, out of humanity itself, this urge for redress of those wrongs. And the writings of Alice Bailey say that, in fact, the labor movement was hierarchically inspired, meaning that the masters, the spiritual beings who oversee the growth and evolution of our planet prompted and worked through some of the major leaders in the labor movement.
Yes, I don't think that's what many people think of as being a spiritual movement, you know, the labor movement over there in the last century or so, last 150 years actually. But it started out, because it started out in such violent ways. I mean, there were actually, you know, people being killed and maimed and so forth, because there was such a reaction from the capitalistic forces to the labor movement and people who just simply wanted to improve the conditions of their life, I mean, their working life and their home life, and just to get a decent wage. And there was such a reaction to this, but that's often the case with new ideas coming into view and presenting themselves and forcing themselves onto the status quo. There is often a conflict there.
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about the labor movement is that it shows that the plan of God includes every aspect of life and every human being and every kingdom. It isn't just something that works through the most exalted and the most spiritually advanced people, but it includes the least of us, and it includes all of us. And what's interesting is the comment in the writings of Alice Bailey that, in fact, the people who are considered the disciples, the real spiritual activists of the labor movement, were not themselves particularly spiritually evolved or advanced, but they were responsive to human need, and they were courageous enough and inclusive enough in their consciousness to take responsibility for organizing the labor movement. And it suggests that the plan works through people who are not necessarily terribly aware in their waking consciousness of the spiritual significance of what they're doing, and yet they are in fact actively involved in something much greater than themselves.
Yes, they weren't aware of their spiritual status at all, but because they were closer to the consciousness of the workers at the time, they could get right down there at that level and do the work that they felt impelled to do, and which was to organize a union of workers and to bring workers together. And this is probably one of the first indications of real group work taking place in the world, at least in this part of the world. And that is a tremendously a spiritual undertaking, because it's grown today. I mean, everything happens by way of a group, and we see that so much more energy and so much more power can be generated by a group work, and the labor unions were the kind of the forerunners of that.
In fact, today the labor unions have become themselves sort of dictatorial in their power and influence, and they control masses of money, which is interesting. At the time that the labor movement began, laborers had nothing, no money, no rights, no power. And now the labor unions in many countries of the world are a considerable force, and the labor party in a lot of different political systems, for example, Britain, holds great power on a political level. In fact, you could say that there are problems within the labor aspect today, just as there are within the holders of capital, the people who control the money. In some ways, they are equal in their self-interest, in the sense that both sides have to keep in mind that they are all human, and that humanity includes the capitalists, the managers, and the laborers. We are all part of the one humanity, and that no one side contains all the good and all the rights, and the other side is not necessarily responsible for all the wrongs. So there's a real experiment in right human relationships being worked out through the very mundane practical problems of labor and capital. There's something very spiritual being balanced, and a kind of an equilibrium among the different forces at play within humanity, because economic needs are real and urgent, and they are just as an appropriate a sphere for the plan and for spiritual values to be expressed as the field of religion or education would be.
Yes, it's that's interesting, because industrialists at the time, they have to learn the value of right sharing and cooperation and working with workers. And I think that's one of the great spiritual advancements that today many of the corporate leaders do recognize the value of their workers, and they see them as a great asset. And that's a complete turnaround from the way it was like 150 years ago, when they were fighting their workers and actually killing them, some of them. And so it represents a tremendous growth in human consciousness through the work of this labor unions.
For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight. Today we're speaking about labor. The actual title is The Spirit of Labor. And we would like you to find out more about us. There's people out there who inquire about us, and we have a general package of information that's quite comprehensive. And there's some good literature in there that I think you'll find to be interesting reading. But if you want to find out more about our meetings or how to get in touch with us or perhaps even to join us in meditation, what you can do is just give us a call. Ask us for the general package of information. Call on our toll-free number, which is 1-866-695-8247. Once again, that's 1-866-695-8247. The easy way to remember it is 1-866-NY-LUCIS. LUCIS is L-U-C-I-S. 1-866 New York LUCIS. Our website, www.lucistrust.org. We need your help because a lot of you have expressed interest in our radio show and want us to remain on the air as we want also. We're in sync with that desire. But all of the work of the LUCIS Trust, including this radio program, is funded by the voluntary donations of people like yourselves who support the goals of the LUCIS Trust. So help us out, because we're not endowed, nor do we have a wealthy benefactor who helps to pay for this program. We depend on the donations, large and small, of individuals, so please give if you want these programs to continue on the air. Donations can be sent to LUCIS, L-U-C-I-S, LUCIS Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. Once again, that's LUCIS Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And once again, if you want that general package of information about exploring who we are and how to perhaps join us in meditation meetings and other meetings we have that I think you might find inspirational and also might even be a catalyst to your own spiritual evolvement, give us a call for the general package of information at 1-866-695-8247, or the easy way is 1-866-NY-LUCIS, L-U-C-I-S, 1-866, think of New York, LUCIS. Back to our show on labor, and the writer, E.F. Schumacher, wrote about good work. What did he mean by that?
Good work was the title of a book he wrote. He also wrote Small is Beautiful, which our audience might have heard of. He was, I think, an economist and an educator, and he had some very interesting and insightful ideas on what work is meant to be. He said that there are really three purposes to human labor. One is to provide necessary and useful goods and services. That's pretty obvious to understand. Another is to enable every one of us to use and thereby perfect whatever gifts we have. And by that, I don't necessarily mean that we may possess artistic gifts or great intellectual gifts, but every laborer, every human being has something to contribute to the larger society. And the role of labor is to enable a person to make that contribution, to be part of something greater than his own little domain, his own little realm. And third, to do so in service to and in cooperation with others. And in that way, he said, liberate ourselves from our inborn egocentricity. Break out of the shell of me, the drama of me, and become a participating member of society. And even for the uneducated worker, there is something that every person can contribute. And I think one of the most important aspects of understanding the role of labor is to realize that all honest work has dignity. And to me, that's one of the gifts or the achievements of the labor movement, that they have protected and affirmed the dignity of the common laborer, but also that We have to get away, I think, in this society from associating successful work with a big paycheck. And Schumacher addressed that point, as did the Buddha, in fact. The Buddha designated right livelihood as one of the steps on the Noble Eightfold Path, and he believed that it's impossible to make spiritual progress if what you do in the majority of your time in your daily life, in other words, your work, goes against your spiritual values, which is an interesting thought. It doesn't mean that everybody should be a teacher or a physician or a garbage hauler, all of which contribute to the common welfare, but it does mean that you should be able to look at your occupation and see some value to the larger society, and not simply a using and a plundering of society for your own benefit.
Yes, it broadens and deepens the whole concept of work. I think it draws out from within the individual the best or that as the gift that each one of us has to offer. And some may think that, well, I have no gift to offer. I'm not gifted in any particular way. I'm not a prodigy of any kind. But everybody does have this special qualities that are soul qualities, actually, that can be drawn out if one is willing to see work in those terms. And I think that's it's very insightful on the part of Mr. Schumacher to see work in that way, and to see it also as a service in cooperative effort with others, which is a wonderful way to bring one's bring this soul self outward into the daily life.
I remember seeing an interview with a man who had a very unusual occupation. His job was to go and, should we say, salvage or redeem the bodies of people who had died in public spaces, and their remains had to be picked up and taken to the morgue and dealt with. And when you think about it, what a grim task that would be. For example, to pick up a suicide who had jumped from some high floor, or someone in traffic or whatever. That was his job, and he spoke about his job with such a sense of honor and pride, because he knew it was absolutely necessary to society. It's something that has to be done. So I don't think we should ever underestimate people's capacity to find dignity and value in their work, even though it might be an occupation that doesn't require very much education, or that may not even be very pleasant on a daily level. Look at what police do and firemen do. A lot of what they do is dangerous and scary and unpleasant, but thank goodness that they do what they do. So the values and the rewards of work may not be what we would expect them to be. And I think to awaken to what those values and what that significance is to look beneath the level of the outer apparent depiction of labor, to the underlying satisfaction and rewards. We have a very materialistic view of life, so many of us, that just looks on the outer level and says, well, would I want to sit behind a desk or not? Would I want to wear a uniform or not? Would I want to work on a set schedule 9 to 5 or not? And make our decisions in that way about what labor is appropriate and what isn't. But in fact, it's something much more subjective that we gain from good work, I think. And this was something E.F. Schumacher understood. And I think the schools could do so much better a job of teaching young people to think about their work life in this way. So often, education is just pointed toward fields where you'll get the biggest paycheck.
Yes, and that's one of the tragedies, I think, of the education system, that it seems to work just only for that direction. And I think children that see education as just in terms of what they can get in terms of a bigger paycheck is they're missing something too. I often like to think of to turn the whole question around and look at work from the position of the soul. The soul does its work in the world through us. Now, the soul is constantly at work. It is working at bringing forth and fulfilling the plan of God in this world. And that is its work. And it does that joyfully, with joy. And it is constantly working through these personality lives that we all lead, trying to impress upon these lives the values that God is trying to present in the world. That is the work of the soul. And I think if we could see from a different perspective, turn the whole question around 180 degrees and look at it from that perspective. I'm a soul in this world. What am I supposed to be doing? So,
another example along that line might be the contribution of a mother who works behind the scenes in a hidden capacity in so many respects to prepare a child for the world, is not particularly recognized or acclaimed for all that hard work, but is doing something absolutely essential, helping a child to grow and bloom. That's the energy of the soul working through the mother. And real labor must be an expression of soul energy that is redeeming and transfiguring some form on the outer level. That could apply to a farmer, to somebody who cleans offices, to an accountant, to a teacher. That capacity to redeem and foster would apply on so many levels. If we think about labor in that sense, we might get a better insight into what we're meant to be doing in whatever job we hold.
Absolutely, and it's really trying to realize what our spiritual position is in the world. And as you said earlier, no matter what kind of work we are doing, there is a spiritual component to it, because we're bringing something of ourselves to the world and in this kind of work that we do. And there is a spiritual force behind it.
There must be something about labor that has an undeniable value, because so often people who have won the lottery continue to work. They don't give up their job. People might think that's strange, but I don't. It's part of how they express themselves. It's part of what they give to the world. They show up at their job every day. Being part of an office or a group of any kind, a factory, a team, is probably one of a person's earliest experiences of group relationship beyond the family. Anybody who holds an occupation that is anything other than total self-employment is involved in cooperating with others, doing one's particular part for something larger than the individual self, contributing to something greater than the individual existence. It's an experiment in group work, even if you're working in just an ordinary office.
And there's so much more emphasis today on group work, and it is becoming very spontaneous in with many younger people in particular, I think. And that's a very encouraging sign, because it's coming straight from the soul.
And once again, if you'd like that general package of information, it's filled with literature explaining more about Lucis Trust and informing you as to how you might be able to join us for meditation meetings or for other meetings that we have that you might find interesting. Just give us a call. We'll send that general package of information out to you free of charge. 1-866-695-8247. Once again, that's 1-866-695-8247. The easy way to remember it, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of 1-866-NY-LUCIS. LUCIS is L-U-C-I-S. You've been listening to Inner Sight, And now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.
I don't have to tell you about the fast pace of living in the New York area and the day-in, day-out toll it takes on your health. You and I can't afford to get sick. There's too much at stake, too much to do. That's why I recommend and personally use E3 Live, a wild-grown superfood that double-blind studies show boosts the immune system. People may be sneezing and coughing all around you, but you'll be protected with E3 Live. But that's just the beginning. Scientists say E3 Live is an adaptogen, a healing food that nourishes away hidden nutritional deficiencies behind the thousands of health imbalances whose names we can hardly pronounce. That's why the benefits of E3 Live are so numerous, including dramatic increases in mental concentration, energy endurance, reduced mood swings, natural weight loss, smoother skin, healthier hair, intestinal regularity. Whatever weak spots your body has, E3 Live fills in the nutritional gaps. The harvesters of E3 Live stand by everything they say by offering a guarantee yet to be matched by anyone in the health food marketplace. Up to a full year. If you don't feel a difference with E3 Live, based on your own evaluation, your money will be completely refunded. No questions asked. I strongly recommend you experience the benefits of E3 Live for yourself, just as I have. E3 Live is certified organic, kosher, and recommended by physicians and health practitioners worldwide, including Staten Island's own Dr. Fred Bishi, Olympic gold medal swimmer Grant Hackett, as well as people who ride the subway each day. So pick up the phone now and speak to a friendly E3 Live representative. Don't just survive. Thrive with E3 Live. Call 888-800-7070. That's 888-800-7070.